Welcome to our book club today, the Leaders Book Club. What a pleasure to have a conversation with you again, just for you to follow us, just for you to have an opportunity to see exactly the conversation we are having with my friend Thomas Joyfel. And today we have a special guest and someone who have followed us on social media, and we invite her to be part of it, because at the end, what is leadership and why are we having a book club? Because we want to have a conversation. We don't want to have this conversation for us. We want to have that conversation for you. And the most important thing is that you take whatever nuggets you find from this and you continue the conversation. And I will email you some information I've got from my friend Thomas Joyfel. You can go on my Facebook page for more information regarding his work, and as well to find the page on leadership and self-assessment. Thomas, welcome. Once again, thank you for your time. We will start.
Thank you.
Hey, how you have been doing for the last 2 weeks?
I've been doing great. Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be with all of you and those of you who will be watching or are watching. I just want to say that my name is pronounced Zweifel. I know it's a tongue breaker, okay? But Zweifel means in English doubt. Okay, so I am doubting Thomas, and if you think that that's inconsistent with leadership, I would remind you that Voltaire, the philosopher in France, in the 18th century said that doubt is not a pleasant condition, but certainty is absurd. So if anybody thinks that they can avoid doubts right now, especially in this crisis, especially in this corona crisis that is affecting everybody, whether rich or poor, whether black or white, whether you know, Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Zoroastrian or Seventh-day Adventist, whatever they are, it affects all of us. So given that, Roosevelt, I'm actually doing really great. I'm very privileged to be healthy, and that my family is healthy, and that the crisis has not affected us personally, although we did lose some friends, unfortunately. But I'm personally doing very, very well. And the crisis is actually turning out to be an opportunity in disguise. It's actually an opportunity to be closer to family. It's an opportunity to step back from the action and look at our leadership and see what could we learn? How could we use this crisis to innovate and to develop new ways of doing business that could be better for the future? And I would also say, Roosevelt, that whatever organization or whatever company does not adapt to this crisis, they will probably suffer even more. So this is a time to be proactive, not just reactive to the crisis, but actually see what future we want to build and what we want to provide for our customers and for our followers, and then provide that and use the tools that the crisis can give us. So that's maybe too long an answer. But
no, I think that's a good wrap up of the last two, three sessions we had. The last two, three sessions we had, we started with the conversation. It was very simple as, hey, let's have a conversation about leadership. And today we define leadership, what it is. And today, last 2 weeks, we spoke about assessments, and that's why I invited a couple of guests. And I'm so glad that Mrs. Jackson is with us, because at the end of the day, we need to assess. And for us to assess where we are, we need to know where we are going. And that's why we might have what we call some specific project. And if you can just make a recap, but let me just say hi to Mrs. Jackson. I would like you, hey, why are you here today? And I know you have been very active with your church. When I met you on Instagram, I saw you have some soul notes, which is outstanding. You are very active in our community as well. Welcome. This is Jackson.
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Roosevelt. Thank you, Thomas, for this great introduction.
It's a pleasure.
That is fascinating, your name. And I do agree. I do agree with what you're saying, is that certainly everyone is moving, taking step with doubts, but in all things, you know, we have to overcome doubt and take the leap of faith. So we, even we're still walking into the unknown after post-corona, a post-corona living, we all have doubt. But then again, like you said, we have to set up certain blocks and be proactive into what we can do and how to better adjust our lives to continue progress. I thank Roosevelt for inviting me here. I listened to
this podcast. Is my pleasure. As a matter of fact, you invite yourself, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. There is, we call lots of people to participate, and you express not only interest, but now you put the commitment. That reminds me the story of the pig and the chicken about breakfast. You know, the chicken said, oh, I lay the eggs, and then finally they can make, but the pig said, yes, I am the bacon. I put all myself in it. And today, here you are. Thomas, let's go back exactly. What did we say about leadership? Why we need to make a self-assessment about ourselves? Why?
Yeah, and Mrs. Jackson said it very well, yes, we need to doubt, but we also then need to overcome the doubt. And what comes to mind is something that the composer Arnold Schoenberg said once, that courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is to have fear. So you have fear, you might have doubts, you might have trepidations, but then to actually go despite the fear or with the fear, right? And so I think that's what leadership is. Leadership is to have doubts. If you're not doubting, then you will not innovate. You will not learn new things, right? So you have to doubt, and then you go with that doubt. You go full out into the action. And I'm now not sure. Are you asking me about the self-assessment?
Or
what was the question?
First of all, share. If you want to have it, let me know. Whoever is listening to this, I'm putting exactly the flyer that you, Thomas, you sent us: leadership, self-assessment, and development, the global leader pyramid. So that means at the base of the pyramid, we start with our self-knowledge. Why don't I let you explain this, because you have done it yourself, Thomas. This is your work.
Yeah, perfect. And by the way, this is also in the book, the famous book, Leadership in 100 Days, right? So on day 4 is the self-assessment, okay? So this is the same, basically the same self-assessment that Roosevelt just showed on the screen. And the basic idea is that, and you might say that's actually consistent with doubting, right? So you're basically examining yourself. The first level of the pyramid is self-awareness, right? So you need to actually look at yourself and see, what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses, and not just be overconfident and say, yeah, I got it and it's all great, but actually step back and assess yourself along these 5 levels of the pyramid. Thank you, Roosevelt. That's perfect. So the first level is self-knowledge, right? So you could also call it self-leadership. So before you lead somebody else, before you charge up the hill, you need to actually look at yourself and see, do I know myself? Am I able to lead myself? For example, am I able to regulate my emotions? Or do my emotions just get the better of me and I have temper tantrums? Or I'm stuck with fear, or I'm you know, I always get angry when somebody criticizes me.
And you know what? This is a good question I would like to ask Ms. Jackson, because at the end of the day, that's why we are here. Do you know yourself? Tell us about you. When was the last time you had fear?
I feel sometimes I think I'm in a point where I'm having fear and a bit of doubt even now. Just like, like we talked about, we're transitioning into new things and taking into repositioning the things that I'm doing with my business and my children, thinking about whether or not I'm going to keep them full-time homeschool. So there's some fear there. And yes, I want to address something about the pyramid. That's exactly, I feel like this is exactly the point where I am. In the past year at my church, my pastor started really training about leadership and leadership. And I started to question whether or not I was a leader, whether or not I was not in a position where I was leading at a role at my church. I'm a realtor, I only work with myself. And I thought, well, I mean, I'm not in a leader position until I realized, and he says just exactly what Thomas has expressed, that leadership starts with yourself. Mm-hmm. And so therefore now I feel, well, I have to focus on myself and then I realized, well, I am a leader as a mother. I'm a leader as well to my children. Mm-hmm. So now I found myself, and I used to always read about leadership, and we know about all the names and the big gurus, and I just thought maybe I was not yet in that position. And that was not something that applies to me yet.
Understanding, you mentioned yourself, you have recognized your doubt. And Thomas, you have heard, as a mom, she defines herself as a leader. And I remember when we started our conversation the very first day, you were asking me about other types of leaders. We mentioned big names, global mm-hmm. names, like Winston Churchill, like Abe mm-hmm. Lincoln, like Mother Teresa. And myself, I said, my dad. And I was astonished that you agreed that, yes, because he's an example. Now, Do you consider Ms. Jackson to be a leader in the way that you make assessment?
I would assert that that's a rhetorical question, because the answer is absolutely yes. I have never been a mother, and maybe next lifetime, but not this lifetime. But I know that, and I see this every day with our two young daughters, that bringing up two children or bringing up any children and bringing them up with values and giving them a safe environment in which they can flourish and grow, that's leadership. If leadership is leading leaders to develop people that are self-reliant, that are resilient, that have good values, that can deal with the inevitable breakdowns that happen in life, that's a major leadership challenge. And unfortunately, it's undervalued, right? I mean, society does not value, at least economically, it does not value the leadership profession of a mother or a father. But it's absolutely leadership. And Ms. Jackson, I'm so glad that you communicate so openly. Because I think full communication, open communication, is also part of self-awareness and therefore part of leadership. And I would say that, and we defined leadership on previous calls as, and that's at least in my definition, leadership is not, to be Winston Churchill or to be Bill Gates, and these are all fantastic people. It's not to be like somebody else. It's not to imitate somebody else. Leadership, and I'm going to quote the rabbi that I quoted, I think, at the end of the last call, Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. There was a rabbi whose name was Rabbi Zusha of Amipoli. So this Rabbi Zusha in the 18th century said, "In the world to come, I shall not be asked, 'Why were you not Moses?' I shall be asked, 'Why were you not Zusha?'"
Right.
And yes, That's, in my view, that is the key. And that's why I would say, Ms. Jackson, you're absolutely a leader. And I hope that you trust yourself to lead. And the good news that I can give you that is that, at least in my definition, leadership is not an inborn trait. It's not some psychological mystery. It's not charisma. That's what people say after the fact, right? I met Nelson Mandela, for example. I met Bill Clinton, and people say that after the fact, you know, oh, these people are electrifying, etc. But in my book, leadership is a function of having certain conversations. And to go back to the self-assessment, the first level of leadership, self-awareness, is basically a conversation that you have with yourself. And you say, you know, why am I getting impatient right now? Or why am I so angry? Or why is this important to me? Which goes straight to my core values as a human being. And between you and me, the leaders that took people astray or that wrought great havoc on humanity, the most dramatic example is Adolf Hitler. But there are other corporate leaders, you know, the leaders of Enron, for example, that did not really check themselves. They never looked at their value system. They never checked their self-awareness. And so they then may have been effective at the higher levels of the pyramid, but since they never put in the foundation of the self-awareness, they led in a wrong direction, in a way, in a direction that was actually damaging to the people. So that's the first level.
Now let's move to the second level. We're talking about, you mentioned relationship and communication. Why communication and relationship, why they are important and why they are almost at the foundation, because this is one layer above yourself, your knowledge of yourself. Why is that?
Exactly. So the way I like to say it is that the broader and the deeper you build your relationships, the higher you can build the pyramid, right? So at the relationship level, you basically communicate and you build trust. You build shared interests. You build shared values. Now that you're clear about your values, you can look at somebody else. For example, in your church, in your organization, in your business, no matter where you work or where you live, and you can see, are the relationships that I have solid enough? Do I need to build additional relationships? Am I able to build trust? Am I able to build shared values, shared interests? I need to look up some of these things.
So you're talking about, we need to cultivate and also go deeper in our relationships. And I would like to ask Ms. Jackson, how do you develop your relationships with others? So let's start, if you want to be a leader in your family, by example, so there should be better relationship within the family. And how do you cultivate that relationship? And how do you communicate your ability to influence those you want to lead?
Yeah, certainly. in regards to my relationship, I would say in my family, we have my relationship with my husband and my relationship with my children. Just like you guys, Thomas says, self-assessment is a process that's, you know, that's where I feel like I am right now, implementing that in my journey now of leadership, exploring leadership or walking into leadership. Yes, I'm assessing myself and assessing my relationship and my behavior and the way I communicate with my husband, the way I communicate with my children, and assessing certain ways that I, you know, things that I say or the way I say something, and whether it's going to be profitable to them or profitable to me, and that certain languages is not proper, to be more patient with my children. even in telling them, you know, that we're not going to do something, you know, there's a proper way of communicating that to them that is best, even with my husband, a certain way to communicate, being patient in his communication style, being patient in the way we communicate, feeling, working on it, you know, not just allow it to be. Being aware or cognitive of the mishaps we have in our communication. Being aware of how it's not working how we're communicating on this certain topic. And maybe we should just, okay, take a pause and then come back around. And next time around, I try to first change something about the way I'm communicating with him. Understanding, okay, this is the problem where I can change, and then to help our communication, and then eventually allow him to, you know, follow suit. And the same way with my children. I find it, you know, that's where I see that now the role of leadership is taking place, where, like he said, it really starts with self-assessment. I'm assessing the way I used to do things in order to have a the outcome that I desire, a better outcome.
Now you become aware of your own communication with others. You become aware of the relationships that you are building. And if you are following us live, you are following the Leaders Book Club, and with Thomas Zweifel and myself, Roosevelt Jean-François. And you know, Dr. Thomas Zweifel, he is an award-winning author, strategy and performance expert. He's a board member and sparring partner for CEOs and leaders of Fortune 500 companies. And since 1984, he is the ex-CEO of Swiss Consulting Group, and Swiss Consulting Group was named Fast Company, company skyrocketing by Fast Company magazine, which is a magazine. And he and Thomas has coached clients on four continents to open their own strategic frontiers and meet business imperatives. And as well today, we are very happy that we are joined in this call today by Mrs. or Madam Farah Johnson. And Mrs. Jackson is very active in her church. She is doing some amazing things in as a realtor, and she is mother of four, and also she has been active on social media, and every single moment she has an opportunity, she wants to empower others using the Psalms from the Bible to share content on Psalm notes. And so far, we have seen what is leadership and what is the leadership style that you and I we could have. And Mrs. Jackson shared her own assessment. And now we are at the second level of our global leadership pyramid, which is communication and relationships. And now we want to move into the third one. And our third one is, let us see.
Vision. But Roosevelt, just before you go to the vision level, let me say a few words about relationship, because Ms. Jackson really hit all the notes. So I just want to underline some things that she said. And if we look at the bigger picture right now, you know, since the Floyd George situation that happened in the United States, I would say it's abundantly clear that there's a lack of trust. You know, there's a lack of trust between black and white. There's a lack of trust between the government and the people, or the government and the citizens. And you could expand this and say, sorry, I was distracted for a second.
Sure.
There's a lack of trust between companies and customers, you could say, right? That, you know, are the customers trusting, for example, Facebook that their data will not be abused in some way in an election, for example, or abused or misused for commercial gain, right? There is maybe mistrust between marriage partners, between husbands and wives. So you could say that in a way, maybe I'm overstating it right now, but just to make the point, the lack of trust, or to say positively, the building of trust is perhaps the most important thing that you and I can do. If we build trust beautifully and deeply, everything else will follow. You know, the upper levels of the pyramid will automatically and organically grow from that. And to repeat again what Roosevelt said earlier, if you don't build that trust, you can still build something maybe, but you cannot build very high, and it's not going to be on a very solid foundation. So that's really the bottom line about this whole relationship level. And then, you know, I cut it down in different things that so you can actually systematically develop those skills, like listening. For example, a few years ago, I reminded the CEO of the importance of two-way communication. And he grew kind of adamant and said, of course I do two-way communication. I talk to my people and I write to my people. he completely forgot or ignored the other part of communication, which is listening, right? And the book actually gives levels of listening. You know, it's not just listening like a light switch and turning it on or off, but you actually go all the way from ignoring to controlling to projecting, mm-hmm. pretending to listen, then to actually respecting and then empathizing, where you listen for the intention and then generating and then mastery, which is what Martin Luther King did, basically to listen for the listening. You know, as I'm speaking to you, I'm trying to listen, what is the listening mm-hmm. that I'm speaking into, so that I'm not just broadcasting my stuff, but I'm actually listening to the listening as I'm speaking. And by the mm-hmm. way, Miss Jackson, as Roosevelt knows, my bio sounds amazing, but you know, I'm going from failure to failure. So that's what Churchill said as well, right? Success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. So I definitely do that in my life.
Thank you. That gives me
I think by, you know, I think by failing is when you learn. So failure for me is not something negative. It's a building block of success. It's a necessary building block of innovation.
That's
I like the way it is, because there is someone asking the title of the book. The book is Leadership in 100 Days. Leadership in 100 Days.
Oops, sorry, and this is upside down.
For you, Marie-Flor Trevent, following us. And that she asked a question on Facebook. And the question is exactly the title of the book. And we have been studying this book as... Because at the end of the day, what we want to do is to do something together. It's not about telling you exactly what is in the book, because we want you to discover. We follow the structure, but at the end, we want you to have your own assessment. We want you to become you. Now, we talk about assessment. We talked about leadership based on trust with communication to build the right or an environment. When we talk relationships, sometimes we have conflict. That does not mean that we need to sing Kumbaya all the time. even in the best family, we also have our human nature. We also have our own shortcomings. And as a leader, we need to have emotional intelligence the very same way that Daniel Goleman has talked about emotional intelligence. But mm-hmm. I need, as a leader, understand that whenever words get out of my mouth, it has a consequence. Mm-hmm. And if this is in because I'm angry, I do not control my temper, but I know if I want to influence, I need to have control of myself, and that's what you call trust and so forth, Thomas. Am I clear on the way I...
That's brilliant. Now you said so many brilliant things that I have to answer again before we go to the vision level. One of the things that Roosevelt just said, which is absolutely important, is that the words that come out of our mouths actually create reality. And I just read literally yesterday that brain researchers were looking at a word. It's a kind of an ugly word. It's called vomit, right? If I say or read the word vomit, they saw that in the brain, mm-hmm. a certain disgust gets activated in the brain. This is just by seeing a word, right? So the Hebrew word for word also means... it's called davar, right? So the Hebrew word for word means also word and thing. So basically, whatever I say becomes a thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're looking at the religious dimension, God created the world through certain sentences, right? There shall be light. There shall be animals. There shall be human beings. And we're created in God's image. So we actually have the capacity to create reality through our language. And that is by speaking, a mouth, and by listening. And God did not create us as angels. You know, if we were perfect, we would be angels. But he created human beings. So human beings are fallible. Human beings have weaknesses and strengths. And it's our job to bring the secular, you know, the earth, the world to the divine. That's our job as life, as human beings. And so I think, you know, if we're not complete, if we're not perfect yet, that's in a way perfect, because our job is to close that gap between the divine and the human, in a way, and to rise up. And we're not perfect yet, obviously. So, sorry, Roosevelt, I know you want me to go to vision, but I wanted to just put that in.
The next step, Thomas, is vision.
Yes. Could you bring up the self-assessment again?
Yes. Let's move with the third level in the pyramid right here.
Exactly. So now that you've created your self-knowledge and you've created the relationship and the trust and the full communication, now you're going to the vision level, where you actually create a future with people. And again, whether that's for your church or for your family or for your company or for your government agency or for the United Nations, it doesn't matter. Whatever future you want to create. And the important thing is, can you create it with other people instead of just imposing it on other people, or instead of just, you know, taking it from somebody else? For example, I had a client a few years ago and I asked him, what's your vision for the next year or 5 years? And he said, my boss wants me to double revenue. And I said, that's not a vision. Number one, it's imposed upon you. And number two, it's a demand placed on you. I want to know, what's your vision, right? What do you want? Or more precisely, what does life want from you? And so along this dimension of vision, you basically would look at your capacity to create vision with other people, your capacity to bring vision back when it gets lost, because it gets lost a lot, right? Ms. Jackson, you mentioned fear. Fear, in a way, is the opposite of vision, right? You're basically caught in the past, and like, what could go wrong? And again, there's nothing wrong with being fearful, but vision is really not to extend the past. It's basically to go from the future to the future. So how can you create an environment in which people are inspired, in which people see the bigger picture? Those are all skills along the vision level of the pyramid.
And now we move to the next one, because we need to cover some content. When we say vision, we say you complete, you see where you are, where you're going. Now, the next one is that not only you need to have that self-knowledge, not only you need to build trust and relationships through communication, now you need to cast a vision. Now, this is where you need to know what to do. This is the do part. You need to have a strategy.
And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So the strategy level is really the question how, in a way. Here you're becoming very skeptical. So at the vision level, you were maybe expansive and anything is possible, and you're really allowing yourself to dream, and you're dreaming with other people together and creating a vision. Now at the strategy level, you're becoming much more skeptical, much more conservative, and you say, okay, given the current reality, what are the barriers between me and the future that I want? What's missing? But also, what are the opportunities? You know, are there certain opportunities that are there? For example, even in the current crisis, yes, the crisis has dangers, and yes, it has great limitations and constraints that it puts on me. But at the same time, there may be opportunities that did not exist before. For example, in my life, I created the whole e-learning product during the crisis because I saw I could not give my keynotes. I could not meet with my clients, right? I had to do it all by Zoom. So I made a business out of that. So you're at the level of strategy, it's really the question of your strategic thinking, your ability to identify what's missing, your ability to identify blockages or opportunities. Those are some of the strategy skills, and maybe also the ability to prioritize, the ability to to say no. Mm-hmm. To say no to certain demands and say, no, that's not my job. My job is this. My
priority is this. And one thing you mentioned, Thomas, in this moment, you had an opportunity to see hidden opportunities. You have, by example, what we have done now, this is a synergy. I was thinking about the book club and leadership, and you were producing book, and then we found that is synergy, and now we are co-creating some content, and now we have Mrs. Jackson. Mrs. Jackson, how important it is for you to be part of a conversation where you yourself, you are adding to the content that we are providing right now. Unmute yourself.
Yeah, this has been extraordinary. All the great points that you're making and Thomas is making, I find myself I'm living the pyramid right now. I am really living this pyramid right now. I am in the point where I am in the assessment phase and building relationship right now. And it's wonderful. And setting up my vision, you know, like I said before, now I think everybody has to really sit down and look at their vision for a different future, just as Thomas had to adjust, and just as this book club right now is being online and it's being cast in several other places, so the vision is multifaceted right now. I think back then we used to have this one ideal of a vision of a thing or establishing something that seems to be very traditional, but like I said, right now, I really feel like I'm walking through my life. I'm living what is being taught right now. And I love what Roosevelt said about your words, how your words have consequences. And that's what I'm working on in my communication, in the communication right now with my children, in the relationship I'm trying to step with my children, with my words, and being careful with that. And I'm learning.
We are all learning together. And that's what one thing that Thomas said at the beginning is that, hey, a leader, you are never arrived. We are always in constant learning. And in your Global Leadership Pyramid flyer, Thomas, you mentioned, and I am sharing right here with our audience, that you need to take advantage and to be powerful in face of breakdowns. Something puts you down, but you go down with power because you can turn your breakdowns into a breakthroughs. What do you mean by this, Thomas?
Yeah, exactly. And this is perhaps the most powerful tool that I know, and that's in the book, is, you know, that to me is the difference between a leader and everybody else. A leader is not somebody who's perfect. A leader is somebody who takes a breakdown, and I define a breakdown as anything that goes against your intention, right? So you have a certain commitment. It could be a small commitment, like I want to be here for the call at 4 p.m. Zurich time for the Zoom call with Roosevelt and Miss Jackson. And, you know, something breaks down, like the bus doesn't go, and I'm running late, right? So it could be a small breakdown like this, or it could be a large breakdown like a company called 3M creates a glue. They want to build a super glue, right? And the glue doesn't quite stick, right? So they throw it away. They go, oh, you know, it's a bad molecule. It's a bad compound. So we're going to go back to the lab and create a better glue. But somebody... And it was actually somebody on the way to the church choir on a Sunday, and the wind comes up and blows away all his pages with the notes, with the musical notes. And in that moment, he had this eureka insight and said, ha, what if this glue that doesn't quite stick, what if I could use that to mark the pages of my musical notes? And he went back to the company, it's 3M. He goes to the 3M management and he wants to patent this glue that doesn't quite stick. And they don't get it. They go like, that's not useful. Why should we patent this thing, right? So it takes them 3 years. After 3 years of lobbying, the company finally patents this glue that doesn't stick. It became Post-it. It became the little yellow stickies that are now the most ubiquitous office product that you could imagine. 3M made so much money from this thing. And so that's my example.
Now you
take a breakdown. You take a breakdown. You take something that looks like a failure. It looks like you really screwed up, okay? Excuse my language. So it's a failure, but looking from the future, the same thing that looks like a barrier, looks like a failure, looks like an obstacle, looks like adversity, is now perhaps the opportunity for a breakthrough. And that's why I'm saying from breakdown to breakthrough. Mm-hmm. But what you have to do is you have to step back from reacting to it, okay? Mm-hmm. So the same thing in the current crisis, right? If I just react to the crisis and I'm a company and I say, oh, now we have to fire everybody because we need to save money, right? We need to reduce the costs, reduce the overhead, then I'm reacting to the crisis. Mm. But what if I'm proactive? What if I actually create it from the future? I remind myself of my commitment in the background. My commitment in the background for 3M was to basically create something that would serve a lot of customers, right? Mm-hmm. Their commitment was not to create a better glue. That was not the real commitment. So you have to kind of step out of the reaction mechanism and look at your future commitment, and then from there look at new options to the breakthrough.
In other terms, it is always the responsibility of the leader to always cast the vision and to see more in whatever breaks. So even if there is a breakdown, there is no permanent breakdown. The breakdown, yes, can be temporary, but my mindset is permanent. My mindset is always, how can I get the good out of you screwed it up? But yes, there is an opportunity, excuse my language as well. So that is, out of your mess, can I make it a message? Out of exactly. This, can I find a testimony? Can I find something?
Exactly.
And that's what our leaders, and that's why there is no such thing, there is no final bad situation. There is only infinite opportunity in that situation that I am, based on the self-assessment that, yes, I did. I know myself, I know that I can prevail, based on the communication I have with my tribe, with my followers, and the trust and the relationships that I have been building prior to this breakdown, and the vision that I cast. I see tomorrow bigger than today. I, yes, see more opportunities out of whatever situation. Then now, when something happened, I know that I will find the best out of this thing that happens now. Is that exactly so, Thomas?
That's exactly right. And, you know, it reminds me of Winston Churchill. He said once, and I'm sure you know this, he said there are two types of people, right? There are the people who see difficulty in every opportunity, and then there's the people who see opportunity in every difficulty. Mm. And, you know, leadership to me is to be the second type of person. I mean, or was it the first one? To see opportunity in every difficulty, right? As Roosevelt said, there is nothing that can stop you except if you allow something to stop yourself. And it's only human, obviously, you know, to give up or to reduce your commitment or to maybe hide it and say, oh, I hope nobody finds out. Or to hope for the best, maybe somebody else will handle it. But those are all human reactions and they're understandable, but they're completely counterproductive. Instead, all you have to do is, number one, declare the breakdown. That's, mm-hmm, what Churchill did when he saw that Hitler was rearming after World War I, right? He was the first one who saw it, and he warned his country, and for a long time, nobody was listening. The same thing happened when Rosa Parks refused to get up in the white section of the bus, and she said, this is my place. I'm not going to take this. I'm not going to accept this anymore. This is now unsatisfactory for me. I will not take it anymore. And that's all it takes, right? As a first step is to declare the breakdown and say, up with this, I shall not put, as Churchill put it. Number two, revisit your commitment in the background. So what's your vision from the vision level? And then number three, new options for the breakthrough. And number four, declare the breakthrough. Now, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a very simple tool. And I say that this can make you unstoppable if you adopt this.
One thing we know is that there are two things that don't go together, leadership and easy. As soon as you're facing the status quo, you are going against the current. If you are going against the current, that means you have the wind in your face. And that's what we need to understand. So now let's wrap up with this. We know we do have that self-knowledge. We know about relationship and communication. We talked about vision. We know we should have a strategy to turn our breakdowns into breakthroughs, into opportunities. Now, the action process, nothing will happen. Everything we talked so far is in our mind. But now we need to put where the rubber meets the road, action.
Yes. And just to be clear again, that all five levels of the pyramid are conversations, right? So whether it's a conversation that I'm having with myself about my self-leadership and my emotions or my motives, my values, whether it's a conversation to build trust or build shared interests, whether it's a conversation for the future to build a vision, whether it's a conversation for feasibility about strategy, about the how, the budget, etc., or whether it's a conversation for action. These are all conversations, okay? And at the bottom level, I'm asking why. At the second level of relationship, I'm asking who. Who am I? Who are you? Who are we? At the vision level, I'm asking what. What do you want? What does life want from you, from me? At the strategy level, I'm asking how. And at the action level, I'm asking when. Okay, those are the five questions, basically. And so now, in action, action is the supreme virtue, in my view. All of this is just hot air unless we take action. Okay, so who cares about your insights as a leader if you don't take action and produce the results? Okay? Sorry, but it's not like being a legend in your own mind. It's actually being in the action in the marketplace, where you produce something better, hopefully, for humanity.
So now, how to move from intention to results? This is exactly what we need. Action is, okay, you had good intentions, but even hell is paved with good intentions.
A good point. I haven't heard that for a while. That's very good.
Good intentions. Everybody has good intentions. That's everybody correct. Has some resolutions. This is December 31st. And I see myself, 2020 will be amazing. But we don't know what will happen. We don't know the breakdowns, but we have our results. So now we have those powerful promises, those powerful promises that we have done to ourselves or to others. Now, what are those skills to turn intent into result?
Excellent. So I'm showing again the book here, and it's probably upside down or...
No, it's pretty good. I can read it, by the way.
You can actually see it?
Yes, day two, we shall never learn what is called swimming, for example, or what it calls by reading a treatise on swimming. Only the leap into the river tells us what is called swimming. We, as one Haitian president said, you have to swim to get out of the pool.
Very good, very good. So exactly. So consistent with that, on day two of the book, I'm giving you basically a guideline for how to create what I call a catalytic project. And a catalytic project is basically, yes, I have this commitment for the future and I know who I am and I have relationships and I have done the strategy work, but now I want to see what is a result that I could produce in the next 100 days that is kind of like a microcosm of the future that I want to build ultimately. Okay, so it could be I want to build a new company. Okay, so in the next 100 days I could actually create a prototype of the product. Or one of my students actually at Columbia University, he was in the leadership class I think in 2005, and 10 years later he calls me and says, Professor Zweifel, do you remember when I was in your class and I had this catalytic project? And 10 years later, he calls me to say, my company is called, and you can look this up, my company is called Paramount Business Jets, and it's in the Inc. 500 list of the most valuable, the fastest growing companies in the world.
Wow.
Okay, Inc. 500 list. This came out of a set of conversations. I mean, It's just, I almost want to cry because it's so inspiring. Mm-hmm. That what you can do with conversations without having money, without having a title, without having the corner office, you the resources you have are your listening and your speaking, and you can produce extraordinary things. So the basic idea of the Catalytic Project is you take a microcosm of the future that you ultimately want to create, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be that you want to persuade the senior management of a change that you want to make in the company. But you know, ultimately, maybe your vision is to become CEO of the company, right? But for that, you need to create a change so that they see you as a valuable leader. Or you want to produce a breakthrough in sales, or you want to build a new company, or you want to build a new NGO, non-governmental organization, and make a difference in Africa. Or you want to create a new restaurant. You know, somebody opened a restaurant, a Brazilian restaurant in Harlem, in New York, okay, during the 100 days. Somebody else actually wanted to persuade the governments of Israel and Palestinian Authority to hold the next Olympic Games in Jerusalem. I don't think that happened yet. Okay. but you know,
that's the way I see you.
Yeah, that's still left to the future. But the key is in the next 100 days, what could be a goal that you could actually achieve in the 100 days, and that would show you in a microcosm that it is indeed possible to achieve your vision for the future, okay? And then it's a whole questionnaire, right? So basically, what five-year vision is this project designed to validate or to prove? It's kind of like a pilot or a proof of concept or proof of principle. What's the current breakdown? What's the current barrier that this project is supposed to transcend or address? Who's my target audience? What are my 100-day goals? Measurable and understandable and clear, you know, a clear added value. Who are the team members? What's the background support that I need to make this happen? What are the milestones looking back from the 100 days, after 90 days, after 80 days, after 70 days, etc., back to the present, right? What requests do I have of other people and by when? What do I need from other people? And then finally, the most important question, what could go wrong? So what could derail the project? You know, maybe I don't have enough time, or maybe I easily get discouraged, or maybe I need a certain amount of money and I might not get the money. So you basically look at what could go wrong and then look at what success factors you're going to put in place to make sure that it doesn't go wrong. And these 100-day projects, I'm a big believer in it, as you can tell. I believe, as Roosevelt does, you know, you don't build the future in the future, you build it now. You take action now. So in the next 100 days, you know, produce something, even on a small scale, and it will give you so much encouragement and motivation and inspiration to then see, wow, I could actually do this. I could change my life, or I could build this company that I wanted to build for so long. And Roosevelt, I think if my students say one thing about the leadership course that they've been in which they obviously use this leadership in 100 days and Catalytic Project, they say that the basic lesson is fulfill yourself now. Don't wait for later. You know, it will never be different. It's not like, you know, once I'm retired, I can do finally the things I really want to do. No, find a way to do it now. And I know, Ms. Jackson, I know you have tremendous challenges. I mean, you're managing a family, you're managing a marriage, you're managing the church, you're managing the real estate business. So there's a lot that you have on your plate. But I find that you can actually create, even if it's 1 hour a day, you can create the future that you want to build. And maybe it's even that you want to produce a breakthrough with the real estate, you know, to produce one breakthrough in that field, which will then create so much money that you can then alter the other fields of your life and make a bigger difference with the church and the family.
Absolutely. This is so amazing.
And that's the background of why I'm calling it the Catalytic Project, because it catalyzes the future that you ultimately want.
This is so amazing that we need to take some specific time for those catalytic projects. Right. And if you don't mind, I will call on behalf of my followers, listeners, of people from my tribe, and as well as with Mrs. Jackson as well. Why don't we have the next session specifically now on those projects? So, because talking is cheap and it takes money it takes commitment, I will mean, besides money, to make something happen. Now, to wrap up this, Ms. Jackson, you have been with us for the last 15 minutes. Did you learn something? And what is your feedback on this Leaders Book Club? Tell us, in a few words, your appreciation.
I am empowered. I am empowered. I've learned so many things. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. This has given me, it really has given me hope and a new sense of boost my mindset into committing into the things that I needed to work on. As Thomas was saying, to bring it back into a microcosmic point, you know, as a, you know, the book, he talked about a lot of different projects and big company and global leadership, but you can also bring it to your home, mm-hmm. you know, locally.
Absolutely.
You know, that's where I see myself, you know, how it applies to me here, that it can also apply to a mother. You know, my catalyst project would be something as simple as I really would love to be able to wake up at 5 a.m. And I believe that is the catalyst project that will turn my life around, because I would be able to accomplish more things, have a clearer morning, put things in paper, to plan out my day much more fluently, just mm-hmm. by waking up earlier. And I've been fighting with that the last couple of years. And that could be the catalyst project for me as a mother.
We'll be working on it. Thank you for your participation. Thomas, we have one more minute. Again, let's take the commitment with you for the next 2 weeks. We will be live again, and we will be having that Leaders Book Club. At the end of the day, it's not about the books you read. This is about the actions that you take. Thomas, your last word in 30 seconds.
Well, I just want to say to Ms. Jackson that your endeavor to wake up at 5 a.m., that's inspiring. I can tell that would make, it's a small change in a way, but it would make a space for all the bigger changes that you want to make. And so the only...